Welcome to the stream. I'm Ahmed Shahabuddin. Nigeria's presidential candidates are making their final bids for public support in what is expected to be one of the most closely contested elections in years. Millions of newly registered voters could ultimately decide who will be chosen to tackle a range of economic and security challenges. Here's what three of the leading candidates have been saying.
We have knowledge, courage, we have the capacity. We are better, much better than others.
If PDP is elected, we shall restore peace and order in Borno State, not only in Borno State, throughout the country.
Once we win the election, that is the beginning of a new. Is the beginning of a new now.
Joining us to discuss the election from Lagos, Renu Oduwala, project director at Hub NGR and a human rights advocate and community organizer. Idiat Hassan, director at the Center for Democracy and Development, a policy advocacy and research organization. She's joining us from Abuja. And last but not least, Eremo Egbejule is Africa editor at Al Jazeera. He is in Abidjan in the Ivory Coast. And of course, you can be part of the conversation here at the stream. Send us your thoughts through our live YouTube chat. I want to start with a basic kind of outline of the candidates. Let's start there, Eremo. Could you maybe talk us through these top four candidates, some of whom we just heard from there?
I'd say right away that this is an election where you have two candidates from the north, two from the south. For the ruling party, the APC, you have Bola Tinubu, two-time former governor of Lagos, very, very powerful man. You have Atiku Abubakar, who's the only one so far who has served at national level as vice president. Initially elected as governor of Adamawa, never served, went on to be vice president. You have Peter Obi on the Labour Party, who is a two-term governor of, who has been a two-term governor of Anambra State in the southeast. And then you have Rabiu Kwankwaso, who is the two-term governor of Kano and was also a defense minister in the new Nigeria People's Party. So I'd say it's an evenly spread thing. You know, these are men from the four most populous geopolitical zones of the six.
Certainly, and it seems like the two-party system is being disrupted by Peter there, as you outlined. I want to ask you, Renu, maybe we take a step back. What's the mood in the country like? I know that there have been a lot of concerns around the economy, inflation, high unemployment, particularly with youth. How would you describe things a couple of days before the election?
Well, thank you very much. I would say that the reality of many Nigerians today is poverty, is insecurity, is poor leadership, institutionalized corruption, inadequate facilities. Currently, I don't know if you know that we are experiencing even short scarcity in currency of the Naira in Nigeria. So there's a lot going on in the country. Nigerians are probably at their last urge, you know, of falling over, not to talk of police brutality and then the insecurity taking place in several parts of the country. We also have an unprecedented humanitarian crisis, and not to forget the 60% youth unemployment rate in the country. So there's a lot going on for Nigerians. However, still with the elections, just like Eremo said, there's considerable interest and involvement, especially from the youth angle. Many of them are open to participate. Some of them, their first time, some of them, their second times in these elections, so as to have a say in who the next country leaders are going to be. I dare say that the elections will be quite interesting. We've had a lot of polls, a lot of comments, contributions, and the most interesting part is nobody can really say who is going to be the next president. So we will wait and we'll see in a matter of
And I guess that's how it should be. I mean, you outlined so many challenges that the country is facing there. I want to ask you, Idiat, when you hear your two colleagues there framing this election, I know that Nigeria has been in recession twice just in the last 7 years. A lot of people looking to the future, hoping for a real change. How would you frame this election? What's the mood like for you? What's your major concern?
I think this election is both, we can say it's a make or mar elections for Nigeria. On one hand, Nigerians are very excited to be going to the polls. They feel finally that they have a better option aside from the two dominant parties. Now there is no excuse to say that you have to choose the lesser of the two evils. You have four formidable candidates, all with potentials of emerging winner at one point or the other. And it's also an opportunity for them to renegotiate development. When you look at the enthusiasm, particularly amongst the young people, you see that, look, this they're saying, like, look, we have the votes. We have over 39% on the registered voters list. And if we can harness her power, we can actually ensure that there is a change such that the economy can actually work for the young people. It can work for the poor, such that all these challenges of insecurity can finally be addressed.
And it also would be a watershed because if this opportunity is lost, only God knows when.
Yeah, so if this opportunity is lost, Renu, you wanted to jump in there? Go ahead.
I mean, she's correct. If this opportunity is lost, I think that there'll be a lot of hopes that are crushed for Nigerians because, like I said, we're literally at our last end and hoping that this could literally change the country forward. You can also see that what Fomidayat is saying, there's an increase in registered voters this elections. Mm-hmm. And part of those numbers, a huge part of those numbers can be attributed to young people, meaning, like I said, there's considerable interest and involvement for them to participate.
I'm glad you brought that up. Because, you know, we actually saw, I think it's nearly 10 million new voters that have been registered, right? And 84% of them are under the age of 34.
Over 9 million and registered voters.
In fact, I'd like to hear from some of them. This is a clip
and
from...
And 7 million of them were young people.
Fantastic. Here are all the stats that you need. Now, I want to share with you what some of them had to say after receiving their voting cards. This is from January. Take a listen.
Voting for the first time, I'm very excited to wanting to exercise my voting rights, voting the right people into government office to make Nigeria great and proud.
For 2019, I felt we were still, the need for change wasn't that high. But right now, something is very, very clear, that it's time that we transition to the younger generation ruling us. And that's why, if I don't do it now, when will I do it?
Renu, I see that you're nodding there. I want to ask you, though, okay, there's some hope, there's some enthusiasm. They know that they're a big bloc. Maybe this is the moment that they're taken seriously. But I have to wonder, I mean, youth unemployment, a real issue in the country, no?
Yes. And it has also contributed to a lot of apathy in the country. More than 60% of young people in Nigeria are unemployed. And if we can compare that to a country, they could literally be a country of their own. Also, we will look at the state of human rights in the country that led to the widespread protests in 2020. You can see that there is a lot of dissatisfaction with the system. But then, like Idayat said, as young people do no longer have to choose between the devil and the blue sea in order to be able to elect him as a president. Now we have candidates that we can truly vouch for. And you can see that. I mean, not even Nigeria alone. The entire world can see the enthusiasm of young Nigerians in the 2020.
Right. And a lot of those young Nigerians, Erimo, if I'm not mistaken, supporting Peter Obi, or at least that's what it seems like from where I'm sitting. What would you like to add? It looked like you wanted to jump in there.
Oh, no, I wanted to add to Renu's point about there are so many unemployed people that it could be a country. From the latest statistics in 2022, we have 133 million Nigerians living in absolute poverty, right? That's more than the population of Ethiopia, and that's the second largest country across the entire continent, right? So that's one. Another thing to note is this, right? There's immense insecurity across many parts of Nigeria. And then notice you have Boko Haram and all of its offshoots, ISWAP, and other factions, right? Children who were born in 2009, the year that the insurgency began, they will be eligible to vote in the next elections, right? So you have to look at the depth of problems that young people have seen and realized, okay, fine, we're going to have to vote. About many young people deciding to vote for Peter Obi, on the surface, things look like that's going to be the case. But we also have to remember one thing. The Northwest is the most populous zone in the country, right? And there's also a lot of young voters there. We cannot presuppose that all of them are going to vote for one particular candidate or another, right? But the one thing that we can agree on for sure is that most of the voters, I think three quarters of the new voters, are young people. You know, some of them are students who have been at home. Last year, for example, there was a strike that lasted 8 months. And that strike was the 15th or the 16th strike that lecturers have gone on since 1999. So you're averaging a strike every 1 or 2 years in the last 23 years. Yeah.
But
Renu, go ahead. Let's hear from Renu first. Let's just hear from Renu first, if we can. Renu, go ahead. Then we'll come back to you. Go ahead.
Yes. Talking about the students, you know, who actually make up about 40% of the new voters that have recently been registered. You see a recent presidential candidate also telling them that they would spend 8 years in school rather than the usual 4 years. And I dare say that many of them, I think the Nigerian University Commission has also ensured that students go back to vote. So many of them are going to actually be taking part in these elections and be showing their anger and frustration at the system that has kept them at home for almost a year. Also, I think a lot of them are frightened about the promises from the different presidential candidates. I mean, how can you say that I will, you're promising me that I will spend more years than I should in the school. So I think that's a threat, and a lot of them are going to be taking that quite seriously.
Fair enough.
Just go ahead.
Fair enough, Idiot. Go ahead. Okay.
But it's also important to highlight that young people, it's not a monolithic category. Mm-hmm. Most of these young people are actually supporting Ms. Peter Obi, while others are supporting Kwakwa. So fanatically, while the others are supporting the two dominant party candidates as well. So it cuts across, it spread, it depends on the turnout on the day of elections itself. And I'm sure that in few days, we will be knowing by the time we are able to analyze the numbers of people who have actually collected their permanent voters card and which category they do actually belong to.
I appreciate the nuance. Go ahead, Ermo.
No, I was just going to add to that point, right, and say that there's sometimes, you know, those of us who are commentators from the south of Nigeria, there's a tendency to look at things from only one point of view and to see one part of the country as monolithic or to box people's voting preferences into one category. So assume that people's levels of education are somewhat linked to who they will vote all the time, right? And so it's important to note that while we can see the momentum that's being generated by one or so of the candidates, right, in the south, people in the north or in the center of the country, for example, you know, they also have their own preferences. So I think that's also something to note, because we are very quick in the South to assign voting preferences and candidates to certain demography.
No, most certainly. And I really appreciate, you know, that you making us understand, you know, it's not as if all the youth vote in one way or all women vote in one way or even one ethnic group or what have you. I do want to share with you, because the three of you outlined so in such detail sort of all the mounting challenges, let's listen to what Koko Pumpuni Asante had to say, outlining some of the key challenges Nigerians face. Take a look.
There are four key challenges I see to the upcoming Nigeria elections. First is the bimodal voter verification system, the BVAS, and how it's going to perform on election day. Particularly how quickly the INEC is able to respond to breakdowns. Second issue has to do with the new notes, the Naira notes that are scarce, and then also the fuel shortages, and how that is going to affect movement on election day. And the third issue is to do with insecurity and how widespread it will be on election day, and whether it will impact on the turnout. And lastly, it's disinformation and misinformation and how the general electorate are going to respond or react to false information that's disseminated on election day.
Idiot, at the end there, one of the challenges we haven't discussed is disinformation. How do you think that's factoring into this election? Is it?
I think that's one of the biggest challenges in this elections, because information is actually being weaponized. And there is actually a thin line between the online and the offline in Nigeria. So when people think about just like 32 million people online, how does that get to the over 200 million Nigerians? It's just like this. It's very, very broad. And what is being said online is actually impacting candidates offline. And in different sets of ways. In these elections, we are seeing that people are not even, they are weaponizing information to glorify their candidates. We are hearing of some spurious things some candidates have done when we know they are not really achievable. It's being used to delegitimize opposing candidates as well as institution, which plays a very important role. Mm-hmm. By the time you listen to Kojo talking about the bimodal voter accreditation system.
Yeah.
Because now people do not even have trust in that system. People cannot sift right from wrong.
Right.
Or the voters register itself as a challenge while they are as much as possible weaponizing malinformation in this election.
Right. And, you know, Renu, I have to say, weaponizing misinformation, it seems like, as you said at the beginning of this conversation, nobody really knows who's going to win. But with that said, there have been so many different concerns about things, including the central bank. I was reading earlier today, people not being able to withdraw money, as we heard. Actually, let me play this clip for our audience. It's a man in northern Nigeria who's angry, specifically at the fuel and cash shortages. Take a listen.
Everybody's angry with the government. Because we queue for fuel, for your own money that is in your bank, you queue for it. Government collected all our money. They told us to deposit all our money into the bank. That after the 31st, they will give us back our money. But now you cannot access your own money. Which kind of government is this?
I mean, he asked the question there, Renu. What's your answer?
Well, just like he said, the government asks us to deposit our own money and we can't even collect it. But then it's important to note that this is not the first time that this government will be doing such a thing. Buhari was our military head of state in 1984, and the same disastrous policy was enacted then where people couldn't collect their money. Many are on the side of government saying that it will ensure that politicians are not able to buy votes. And many are saying that the hardship is simply too much. The government is absent in a lot of people's lives and still they cannot access their own money to buy the things that they need with their own money. So like the man said, a lot of Nigerians are angry and I expect that to show in these elections. Vote buying will be high. Vote buying is already on the way because of the issues that we've mentioned earlier from Hidayat, from Eroma, from Dr. Kojo as well, that Nigerians are truly going through a lot. And like I said, the vote buying is on the way. But a lot of Nigerians are also going to be voting based on issues that matter most to them, based on the fact that in one of the world's most biggest oil producers, we do not even have oil. There's fuel scarcity currently in the country. The fact that the person who promised us that it was going to eradicate corruption came into the country as a president, and more corruption even emerged. So a lot of Nigerians are angry, right, just like you saw in the and as a young person as well, I'll be voting on issues that matter most to me, as the social issues. So I think that these are what Nigerians will be voting on.
And I'm glad that you're repeating this line. I know that you wanted to jump in there, Aramo, but this idea that Nigerians are angry, I want to share with you a comment that's in our YouTube chat here. From Bonaventure, Eugene, saying, the voter turnout will be massive, but I hope thugs won't disrupt or create fear among voters. That anger, might it turn into violence? Aramo, what were you going to jump in and say?
I was going to jump in and say that Nigeria is a country where, you know, new paradoxes are born every day, right? Imagine telling someone else that Africa's largest oil producer for many years has never had electricity for 24/7, like uninterrupted power supply, or has to import fuel. You know, even though it's just a nation where, you know, there's all sorts of impossibilities happening every day. Now, see, for example, this cash swap and cash scarcity thing in Nigeria. What is going to happen as a result of this? The outcome is going to be that, you know, the unbanked people who we were trying to draw into the banks before, they're going to be even more distrustful of the system. You know, because this person is going to tell you, for example, oh, I had my money underneath my bed, you know, and now you asked me to bring it, but I can't withdraw it, right? You know, so that's going to be something that's going to affect the banking system for years to come. And so that anger is going to be weaponized by so many people in this election, right? You're going to obviously see a much larger turnout. That's what I'm predicting, that you see a much larger turnout at elections than there has been in the last two electoral cycles.
Well, and maybe that wouldn't be necessarily the worst thing. I mean, I don't want to be flippant about it, but I, But I do. It wouldn't be.
On the violence, you mentioned, you know,
tell me.
The elections are quite tense. There's a lot of tension in the country currently. We have a lot of issues that we're combating, right from the northeast to the north. In fact, every part of the country is almost in chaos right now due to the insecurity that is happening.
Well, And this insecurity, just for our audience, if I can, Renu, I just want to share, like, you know, in the north, in the south.
I think there are two issues.
Please, go ahead.
Go ahead, Idiot. All right, it seems as though we're having a little bit of a lag there. Renu, you were saying something, and I think,
yes,
yeah, continue.
I wanted to show the clip that you were about to show regarding the fact that a lot of criminals are actually operating in different parts of the country. If you look at the news, some part of country are no longer in control of the government any longer. They're now in control. They're now in the hands of criminal elements and all that.
And I think your audio is cutting out there, but we did want to share and just visualize for our audience, you know, in the Northwest, a lot of concerns around banditry, also in the Islamic State affiliates, of course, Boko Haram in the Northeast. In the Southeast, there are separatist movements. In the central areas, of course, there's the conflict with the farmers. This is just what I was trying to share with our audience to visualize what you were saying about, you know, much of the country, if not all of the country, is in crisis. And with that in mind, often when there's a crisis, I think of who can solve that. Well, maybe women. I want to ask you, you know, because we've talked a lot about this might be, you know, this election maybe being an opportunity for women. We do have a clip of one woman who's running for a state governorship. Of course, it's a separate round of voting for those who are not familiar with the Nigerian election system, but still very much aiming to break that glass ceiling there. Take a listen.
This is a moment female activists in Nigeria have worked for. A woman from a major political party becoming a candidate for governor. And she is a front runner. Aisha Tubinani overcame religious and cultural barriers in the patriarchal society to get here. She says it's been worth the struggle.
It gives women, it gives our daughters, it gives our sisters, our aunties, our mothers, the confidence that yes, also women can work towards occupying whatever elective position they desire to.
Renu, I'm curious, are you enthusiastic that this may be a shift for women all over the country in terms of being kind of galvanized to occupy higher offices?
On one hand, I am sad because if you look at the 2019 elections as opposed to the 2023 elections, you'll see that there is a decline in the number of women political candidates who are coming up in the political sphere in Nigeria, which means that there's an issue if there could be a reduction instead of an increase. Recently as well, you've had attacks on, and that cannot be on, you know, you can trace that to the recent attacks on the, you know, women leaders, political candidates. Recently, a woman leader was killed in Kaduna, a woman leader of the Labour Party was assassinated. And so there's a lot of political violence geared towards women in Nigeria. They are not usually seen as people who should lead. So on one hand, I'm sad that we have less women who are contesting for political seats. On the other hand, you have women like this and all of the wonderful women who are ensuring that they stand their ground, irrespective of the political climate, irrespective of the fact that our political systems are run by godfathers and all of that. They're still standing their ground to ensure that women are adequately represented. So I dare say Nigerians, go ahead, vote for these women because they will change the future. Thank you.
All right,
I
go ahead.
I want to add that it will be a very, very important 2-for-1 victory if Aisha Binani does win in Adamawa State. Because on the one hand, Nigeria will have its first ever female elected governor. But on the other hand, right, this is Adamawa State. It's in the northeast. This is the same region where 6-8 years ago, Boko Haram kidnapped young girls because... because their mantra is that Western education is forbidden. So it would not just, it would also be a boost for female education and female empowerment generally across that region, the Northeast.
And of course, I appreciate you ending on that note. That's sadly all the time we have for today's conversation. But of course, so many concerns around the queues, the voter registration process, and even on YouTube, as we've heard from some people concerned that polling stations across the country might not all be open. So a conversation we will continue here, where you can always find us online at stream.aljazeera.com. Thanks to our guests. Thanks for watching.